Coming to the close of our study in the book of Philippians, and we'll be looking today at Philippians chapter 4, verses 10 through 13. Please listen as I read these verses. Find them first. But I rejoiced in the Lord. I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at last your care for me has flourished again. Though you surely did care, but you lacked opportunity. Not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. I know how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. As Paul brings this letter to the Philippian church to a close, he adds a personal thank you to the Philippian church. You may write thank you notes after a birthday party, if your friends have come over and celebrated with you, and maybe they've given you a gift at your birthday, maybe your parents will help you to write a thank you note to be grateful for what you've received. Well, Paul has received something from the Philippians. The Philippians use the occasion of one of the men from their own congregation traveling to Rome to send a gift to Paul. His name was Epaphroditus, and we'll learn more about him next week in the verses that follow. But the occasion of sending this gift prompts Paul to say thank you back to the Philippians for their care. He mentions that they weren't lacking in their concern. Something that they always had. They were just lacking in occasion. It wasn't as easy to send monetary gifts or gifts of things that someone might need. They didn't have Federal Express or Western Union in Paul's day, so it had to travel with someone. And the Philippians used Epaphroditus. These verses especially then go on to teach the Philippians about contentment. He says that he had learned to be content in whatever state he was. And just so you know, that he's not talking about state as in the state of Oklahoma or the state of Colorado or Texas. Some of you might be discontent in those states or more content in other states. He's talking about a condition of life. I want to ask the children especially if you can look at those verses, and if someone who is 15 years old or younger can tell me, there are several different words to describe his circumstances or to describe his state of affairs. So look at those verses, especially 9 and 10, and tell me what kind of states that Paul had been in. I'm sorry, I got the wrong paragraph. 11 and 12, thank you. Verses 11 and 12. Just call it out if you see one. Are the boys in the back row looking at their Bible? To be content in what kind of situations?
Hungry.
Okay, what else?
Suffer,
that's right. Mary? Pardon me? He is patient. He doesn't use those words here. What other words does he use? Krista?
Abased.
Abased. Yeah. I think you got all of them. Abased. Oh, one more. Abound. Sorry. Yes, Mary? He is thankful for food. That's right. He is both full and hungry, abound and suffer need. So those are all the different words. And they're two different types of states, kind of on opposite ends of the spectrum, right? So on the one side, he has being hungry, and on the other side, he has being full. On one side, he has suffering need, which helps us to understand what it means to abound. If if on this side he is doing without, to abound means that he is being provided for all of these things. On the one hand, there is to be abased, again, something lowly, doing without, and he uses the word abound again. So Paul says that he's learned in all kinds of circumstances to be content. That's a hard lesson to learn. And it's one that Paul learned through his own experience. You can read through the book of Acts and through the rest of Paul's letters, and you'll find a variety of circumstances that demonstrate both ends of the spectrum for Paul. That there were times where he had all of his things provided for, and there were other times when he was suffering, even being persecuted for his faith. In fact, who remembers where Paul was situated physically when he wrote this letter? I said he was in Rome, but there's more to it than that. Greg?
Was he
under house arrest? That's right. He was in prison. And so he's writing in a condition that would be very much abased, doing without many privileges and provision that you and I just take for granted. And he can say, even in that circumstance, I've learned to be content. I've learned to glorify God in that circumstance and to know that he will not forsake me. That lesson is one that I said is hard to learn because in our own experience, we suffer. We have swings of those along that similar spectrum too. We have times when our needs are met and when our needs seem to go wanting. And it seems to be our tendency, as the commentator that I've mentioned before, Voss, says, that our tendency is to abuse God's providence. To abuse God's providence. And I'd like to pause there and consider how in both circumstances, being in need and being in prosperity, how we can abuse God's providence. So let's talk together about when we're in need. What are the temptations that you face when you're in need, especially your temptation to think about God? Jeff?
Dissatisfied.
Okay.
Feel like God's not taking care of me.
Yeah.
Tends to be angry.
Okay.
We talked about this in Sunday school.
Oh, good. What prompted that discussion? Was it this passage or was it a different?
Commandments 6, 7, and 8.
Mm-hmm.
About not stealing in particular.
Mm-hmm.
The notion that when someone, in terms of not being angry, not killing, not being angry is part of that. If there's someone next to you who's annoying you, the idea is that God's put that person there. Stephen's not annoying. I like Stephen, actually. God's put that person there, and if you don't like it, you know, it means that you don't like what God's done. So put that person there. So that's part of it.
This is a tricky one because it can be cloaked in the need that you think that you have, but it is directed at God eventually or fundamentally. When we are discontent, it is a dissatisfaction with God, not just our own need. We tend to think that God should be treating us differently, or that we deserve to have something better, and that out of that discontent then grow a lot of other related evil things, like you've identified, Liz. So surely, when you're prosperous, you don't need to learn contentment, right? Because all of your needs have been met. The way I said that, you should know, well, no, that's not true, that when we're prosperous, we still need to learn contentment. How is it that you can abuse God's providence when you're prosperous? What is it that you can think about God, or how are you tempted to think about God in prosperity?
There's the proverb where he says, don't give me more than I need or too little, because if he had more, he'd forget about his God.
It's excellent, yeah. Too little or too much, the sin of discontent are still linked together. I thought I saw somebody else's hand. Yeah, Henry.
I think it's the subtle temptation to think I must be in good standing also, which we don't tend to think, or I don't tend to think often. It kind of becomes a litmus test for whether or not God is satisfied with either what I'm doing or who I am.
Mm-hmm.
So if I have prosperity, or if I'm prosperous, then I must be a good person, or I must be in good standing with God.
That's well said. It's because of the focus on ourself and our circumstance. Once again, it's the same thing as when we are in need, when we're focused on ourselves and on our circumstance, that we think poorly of God. When we have a lot, that focus makes it seem as if, well, I must be okay, and we become quite frankly proud or hard-hearted towards God and His dealing towards us. Yeah.
I'd just like to point out that even though that's one temptation, it's like different from when people are poor. In fact, people are prosperous can also be discontent with things. At the same time, being proud of themselves.
Yeah.
So, when I was growing, my dad was a credit manager. He dealt with a lot of like wholesalers and so on, which are often privately owned. And he was always had these stories of these guys who made really good money, but wanted to spend more, a lot more than they could actually have. I can think of some other stories, even in the news this week, where apparently being governor isn't enough.
I was thinking the same thing. I was going to say you almost have to define prosperous, because prosperous is usually, by most of us sinners, prosperous is defined by whatever is just a little bit more than what I have.
Yeah.
No matter how much you have, prosperous is just a little bit more than I have.
Yeah.
And you don't seem to see that coming through in Paul's writing here either.
You may have heard it said, how much is enough? Just a little more is the answer of the, and it doesn't matter where you are on that scale. You never arrive at the place of godly contentment, because there's just a little bit more. What are some of the sins that contentment stands against then, when we think of prosperity? And then we'll flip back and go back to being in need. What sins does contentment help you to put off?
Ungratitude.
Okay. Yeah. Carissa?
Jealousy.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's flip over to being in need, contentment. We've already begun to think about both of these. Paul learned that day by day that the Lord would provide and was satisfied with whatever that provision was. He obviously had future needs and future plans that he was making. Even though he was in prison, he wanted to come and visit the Philippians, but he doesn't express any fears over those needs. So as you think about the idea that Paul often uses of putting off the old and putting on the new, what sins does putting on contentment help you to take off? Claire's jealousy would come into play here. Are there any others?
Pride.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big one.
It really is. Being self-made, self-supplying.
Self-pity.
Mm-hmm. Self-pity. That's a good one. I thought about in both being prosperous and in being in need, the sin of doubt or unbelieving God's promises. And that said, in the context of Paul saying, I've known both circumstances, and that he disassociates the gospel with a prosperity gospel where God is made out just to be someone to give you everything that you have asked for, and instead it turns it around and says that God teaches us contentment in the midst of those, helping us to rely on Him, knowing that He has promised never to leave us or forsake us. Within that light, think back up just a few verses earlier and remember that in verses 6 through 9 that Paul taught the Philippians how to practice this contentment or how to learn this type of contentment. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which passes all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. There's counseling and teaching the Philippians how to learn contentment in their own experience. Verses 8 through 10, 8 and 9, excuse me, then talk about shaping our thoughts. The ultimate fact is that both states of along that spectrum need the grace and strength of Jesus Christ, and that's where it comes to rest in verse 13. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Now that doesn't mean that Paul could do absolutely anything. That's not what is meant in this context. We know very, very well that Paul could not sin through Christ's strength. That makes no sense whatsoever. But Paul could do all God's holy will. And I wonder if maybe some of the littlest children who are learning the catechism can answer the question, can God do all things? Do you know the answer to that, Krista?
Can.
There's a larger answer to that. Can God do all things? God can do all His... That's right. Good job, David. God can do all His holy will. And that's the same as what Paul is speaking about here. God can do all His holy will. He can do everything that is according to His goodness, His justice, His holiness. And Paul says that by Christ's strength, so too, I can obey him. I can glorify him. I can serve him and please him. And there's an example of that in the verses that come next. And over this next week, you can read ahead and look at how Paul encourages the Philippians in what they are doing and how their obedience and their sacrificial gifts that they have sent are a pleasing sacrifice before the Lord. They illustrate how God strengthens us to serve him better and how he blesses us when we do. And I like closing on this point because it's important for us to be reminded that that we do not serve him perfectly. Our obedience is still marred by the fact that we are not perfect. We don't serve him either in a way that earns us salvation at any point. Instead, God receives our obedience in ways that he then blesses and calls them to be good. And in turn, he blesses us and strengthens us, not in our own self, but as we rely on Christ's grace and strength. So as you think about the state that you are in right now, again, not the state of Oklahoma, but if you think about the state that you exist in right now, the circumstance, just in this small room right here, there are a wide variety of circumstances. Some of you are in the midst of pressing needs. Some may be even ones that nobody but you know about. Needs that you think you may have no way of meeting. Some of you may be in the midst of prosperity right now, having those needs met and things going smoothly right now in your life. In both of those states, my prayer is that you would learn as Paul had learned, that you can do all things through Christ who strengthens you. And that in whatever your circumstance, that you would be turning your eyes and your heart to him, to practice contentment as Paul has taught the Philippians and is teaching us as well. Contentment that learns in both circumstances that your relationship with Christ will sustain you. That brings us to sharing prayer requests for each other and a good time for us to put into practice the very thing that Paul has said is part of our learning contentment. I'm going to invite you to share your prayer requests, please, together.